She inspires, educates, and informs. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome. I'm Gina Murphy, darling, and you are indeed listening to Mrs. Green's World, an inspirational and informative place where we never tell you what to think. We just want you to. And trust me when I say we're going to give you a lot of food for thought today, no pun intended. Thanks so much for joining us. And thanks to the sponsor of this show, the Chapman Automotive Group, a company that is committed to doing their share and showing they care about their employees, about their community, and about the planet. More information is available about all the great green energy efficient vehicles they sell in their dealerships at ChapmanTucson.com, and information about all of their community projects at ChapmanTucson.com/community. They're doing a lot. And Chapman, we thank you for all of the above. So I hope everybody's ready for another relevant, important, and exciting show today. And I just want to say, you know, I go into my notes and I talk about what the show's going to be about. But what I'm feeling right now is that we need good news. Those of us that are fighting the good fight, that care about marginalized communities and about social justice and about hunger, all of those issues, this is a great show. This is about hope. It's exciting. There's a force behind this movement, and it's relevant and it is important. It's about food shift from landfills to people, if you can believe that. And joining us for this next hour is someone who is the force behind this incredible movement called Food Shift. Her name is Dana Fraz. She is the founder and director of Food Shift from the Earth Island Institute, an organization which organizes and encourages activism around environmental issues and provides public education. They are a kick-ass organization, and there's no other way to say it. Just check them out. Food Shift is one strong example of their mission, and it's dedicated to building a more just and sustainable food system that curbs waste, empowers communities, respects the environment, and nourishes all people. And I was trying to come up with a really cute phrase for that, Dana, like the green four-fecta instead of the trifecta. So from where I sit, it's pretty incredible. So welcome, and thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Let's tell your story. I'd love you to give just a brief overview of the mission of Earth Island Institute. Who are they? How do they operate? Where does your program fit in? Just give us set the foundation for us.
Sure. Well, Earth Island Institute is this incredible network that supports activists and environmental leaders around the world. And Food Shift is an organization that I dreamed up and found Earth Island Institute as this home, as this family that could really support Food Shift in accelerating our impact and work. I'm able to focus on the mission of Food Shift, which is reducing food waste, coming up with really tangible solutions for communities, and employing people in the process. And Earth Island, behind the scenes, is supporting us and doing a lot of our payroll, the behind-the-scenes legal work that's necessary for organizations to survive and thrive.
The infrastructure that's so challenging and can be very costly and time-consuming, so that they provide all that so that you can do your job and carry out your mission and your passion. So I love everything about that model. So a good place to start next is an overview of the food waste situation. When I found out many years ago that 40% of the food produced in the United States, and in fact globally, is never eaten for a myriad of reasons, it was mind-boggling to me. I thought it was, food wasted from our tables, which is not true. That's not among the most significant. It is. So what is the food situation in our country? What's the problem?
It's a big one.
I hear that pregnant pause, that sigh. It's like it's massive. It's so huge. So, and you're taking that on, Dana. So good luck with that.
Yeah, thank you. And the good news is there's a lot of other people taking it on as
yes,
well.
Yes, totally.
That's certainly what we're going to need if we're going to tackle a problem of this size. One of the things that is starting to hit more and more close to home is the realities of climate change. These storms that are out of control, the droughts that last years and years and years. Food waste is directly part of that problem of climate change. And that's something that we're just now starting to hear. It was mentioned in a recent book by Paul Hawken and a collaborative of people called Project Drawdown.
Drawdown. I'm interviewing Paul in a couple of weeks, and I can't be more excited. Talk about one of my heroes.
Yeah, there are a lot of really great people who worked on that project and on that book, and one of the top solutions that is talked about that will draw down climate change is reducing food waste. So it's critical. It's critical not only from a food and nutrition perspective. We have way too many people in this country, in this world, who are hungry and food insecure, but not because there's not enough food. It's because we're wasting almost half of it. So we need to address this issue from the standpoint of nutrition and feeding people. We need to address it in terms of saving our resources, like our soil fertility, our oil that's used for transportation, the packaging that's used on this food, all the methane that's produced when this food rots in landfills. We have to make some changes there. And then there's this incredible opportunity to use this food to empower, educate, nourish people beyond just the calories in the food, but use it as a tool for education and empowerment. And that's what we're doing at the Food Shift Kitchen.
And it's really, you're right. I think about my buddy Ben Simon from Imperfect Produce. I mean, he's making massive changes from taking those ugly, adorable, freaky fruits and vegetables and getting them on the shelf. So shopping is an experience. And, you know, I remember when Dani Nierenberg, Danielle, I'm sure she might go by now, but from Food Tank, the food think tank, when she started. So that encourages me, and I kind of have to say it out loud, that there are really good things going on and massive changes starting and succeeding. So
Right. What
about food shift as a solution? You're dedicated to building a just and sustainable food system, and those are carefully chosen words on your part, I'm sure. A socially just and sustainable food system. What does that look like? It's more than just recovering food waste. What's your approach?
One of the key elements of our approach is collaboration.
Love it.
And people and relationships are really at the center of who we are and how we work. So when we think about sustainability, it's not just that we are keeping food out of the waste stream and cutting down on environmental impacts. The way we work is sustainable because we are building a really strong foundation that is completely interdependent on the relationships that we have with the community. And that's critical.
It is. I mean, and just like I'm doing the over here, because collaboration is the key. I mean, it is. You're not going in with a cookie cutter approach saying, oh, here's our program. Let's get this puppy launched and everything's going to be great. Collaboration and finding out different needs and assets and all of that is a mission that is bound to succeed. But you work with communities, businesses, government.
Right.
And you're trying to do what I think is the hardest thing on the planet, because it's been our mission since we started over 10 years ago, shift behaviors. You're not selling T-shirts. You're trying to shift behaviors towards a more sustainable use of food. And each one of those segments are different. They have different roles and responsibility. Can you just briefly walk me through a little bit about your approach with each of them? Like, what do you do with communities that's different than businesses or government? How do you go about trying to shift behaviors in those silos and make them not silos, an integrated approach? That is a very long question, but I think you get the gist.
Yes. I'm glad you're using the word shift, because shift is one of the key words that we resonate with and why we call ourselves Food Shift. It's not just that we're shifting food, but it is because we believe that we need to shift behaviors and shift the paradigm around how we're addressing and valuing and distributing food. And there's another really critical component about who we are, how we work. We truly believe that food is sacred, that food has become in our culture something that is, convenient, and it needs to be cheap and fast and easy. And the reality is this food is a gift from Mother Earth, something that sustains us and helps us be alive and thrive. And so the disposal of food at such a level really also indicates something about our spirituality, that we've lost a connection with the source, with the earth that nourishes and feeds us. And so we really want to bring that back. So that's part of shifting the paradigm, shifting the culture, shifting the way we think about food. And then getting more into kind of the tactical, the nitty-gritty of how we work, we truly believe that we need to be financially sustainable as an organization and as a sector. The food recovery sector has been around for a very long time, way back to when there were gleaners gleaning the fields and feeding the poor with the food that was recovered. And today, we see the food recovery sector as the soup kitchens, the food pantries, the groups like Food Not Bombs and the church groups and student groups and food banks.
The National Food Recovery Network. I'm on the National Advisory Board, and look at what they're doing. That's another, beacon of hope that works with college campuses, and the food waste is unconscionable. So they're doing something
right
about that. To your point about you're not alone.
Right. And there's still a lot of food,
yes,
and a lot of people falling through the cracks.
Yes.
So as much as these efforts, over 50,000 groups across the country, and that's an old number, so it's probably much bigger now, these groups are working very hard to keep food out of the waste stream and to feed people, and yet we have about 1 in 7 people in this country who still don't have enough to eat, and 40% of our food ending up in the trash. So something about these traditional models around food recovery and food assistance are not quite solving the problem, and in fact are pretty far off. So I started asking myself the question of what's wrong here? Where are these models getting stuck, and where can we bring in some innovation? And I was deeply inspired by DC Central Kitchen. That was where I visited there about 9 years ago. Light bulb went off, and I thought, this model is onto something.
So tell us about it. What works? Why is it so great?
DC Central Kitchen, founded by Robert Egger, but they just celebrated their 29-year anniversary. Robert realized all this food is out there. There's also all these people who are on the streets. How about we bring them into the kitchen and provide job training and employment? So we're not just pumping out meals, saying, come in every day, we'll give you a meal. But we say, come in, learn, work beside us, help create the meals, learn some skills that you can then go out in the world and you are more equipped to contribute with the skills that we know that you have inside you. Now, DC Central Kitchen has over 150 employees. They've graduated, I think, over 100 students now that have a 90% placement rate in employment outside of the kitchen. All that while they're recovering tons and tons and tons of food from DC area farms and markets every single day, and feeding people on the streets who also need a good meal.
And one of my favorite expressions is the only way to get people to end poverty is to get people out of it. And it's getting people out of poverty. That's the way it happens. And a handout is necessary. You know, I talk about the food bank. Yes, they have to give out food, but our food bank here is part of the national shift, as it were, about it has to be so much more than just a handout of mostly packaged goods. How do we get people engaged and a part of the solution? You know, I love to say one measure of impact is goosebumps. And you just gave me goosebumps about three times and you can't fake goosebumps, but it's like inspirational. And when you said one of them was about saying food is sacred and we don't value it. We don't. I mean, clearly we don't. So that's the beginning to me. You begin to shift in your mind, and the shift in mindset is food is sacred and we have to treat it like that. Okay.
Right.
So that is a really, really important, you know, a thing to remember. It's really good. Now let's talk about, it's a new way to do business. You're actually working to shift food waste into jobs. So how are you doing that? What kind of jobs does Food Shift help create?
Similar to DC Central Kitchen, my inspiration, Food Shift launched the Food Shift Kitchen in Alameda, California 2 years ago. And the kitchen, very similar to DC Central Kitchen, operates where we recover really amazingly fresh produce from different produce markets, including Ben Simon's Imperfect Produce in San Francisco. We go to these different produce markets about twice a week. We bring in anywhere between just about a ton of food every day when we do these pickups. And we have a team of apprentices. And these apprentices are individuals who are formerly homeless, transitioning out of kind of a challenging life circumstance, and are ready to work and ready to learn. And today's an exciting day for us, actually. We just started a brand new class of apprentices who will be with us over the next 6 months.
Yes.
Learning a series of different culinary skills, getting a lot of support from our head chef and our sous chef to hopefully pursue a career in the culinary or food service or hospitality industry. And those individuals are employed and paid while they're with us, while also getting that training and support.
The great thing about the food service industry is that it is a place where there is upward mobility with hard work and tenacity, and it doesn't require a college degree. To me, that is like, it's a skill. People eat. They eat out. Even when there's economic depressed times, people eat out. It's a comfort thing. We just have to keep adding that. Yes, and food is sacred. Please don't waste it. So to me, I went to a presentation recently with a client of mine that employs about 400 people, and two of the chefs came up through the ranks. They're the chefs of two of these restaurants because they started out, one of them as a dishwasher, you know, and just worked his way up to create a real job with real pay, real sustainability for that person and ending a cycle. So, you know, kudos to that. So is the Oakland Project one of the most exciting and successful programs you're involved with?
Absolutely. I mean,
I don't blame you. It's like awesome.
It is awesome. I mean, talk about, I have so many days where I am inspired by the team, by the collaboration, by the stacks and stacks of fresh produce coming in and the trays of food going out to our community partners. It's beautiful to see. And part of what's beautiful about it comes back to that spirit of collaboration and relationship and interdependence is just seeing how many organizations and people, volunteers, donors are contributing to make this vision happen.
It's a movement. I mean, clearly it's a movement. And we are coming up on the first break, which never ceases to amaze me. But when we come back, I know, it's like, what? I'd like to talk a little bit more about when you talked about, you know, get the food out to our community partners. Once these people are involved and engaged in the preparation of the food, what happens to them? And then the other part, I think it would be great to really literally get down in the weeds on different areas for us, the consumer, the people that listen to my show about what do we do when we go to the market? Where do we start? And go through some of those segments that we really can impact, because sometimes the topic is so massive, it shuts people down. But what I love about this program and your website and your approach is that there are concrete ways to just start in our home with small steps. So everybody, stay here with us. We're going to be talking about Food Shift. And you're just going to want to hear everything that Dana has to say, because I know I do. Food Shift from the Earth Island Institute. We'll be right back.
Join us for a new on-demand podcast every week at MrsGreensWorld.com. Listen on your computer or mobile device using the iHeartRadio or SoundCloud mobile apps. We are a proud member of the iHeartRadio, Glimmerglass, and Speak Up networks. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram. Stay in touch with information about healthy living, sustainability, contests, and events by signing up for our e-newsletter on our website. If you have questions or comments about the show, write to us at info@MrsGreensWorld.com. We'd love to hear from you. But right now, back to Mrs. Green.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Gina Murphy, darling, and you are listening to Mrs. Green's World, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. Thanks so much for joining us. And today we're asking you to think about a shift in your mindset about food. We are spending this hour with Dana Fraz. She is the founder and director of Food Shift from the Earth Island Institute to build a more just and sustainable food system that curbs waste, empowers communities, respects the environment, and nourishes all people. Like, what a concept, everybody. Amazing and important on so many levels, because when that happens, we all win. Dana, thanks so much for being with us and for what you're doing. And I did keep my train of thought. You mentioned that these people that are in the apprentice program that are learning how to prepare food, and you said when we distribute it to our community partners. Talk a little bit about that. How does that work, and is that one of the ways that you generate revenue? Tell us.
Yeah, great. Glad you asked. It's an important part of the equation here. We distribute food to a few different locations. Across the street from us is the Alameda City Food Bank, and they come over about once a week and receive produce from us that they can use during their weekly distributions. And what we do is we're able to process it for them, which means we might be picking out a few of the cucumbers that don't look so hot. They might be a little soft or not really proper for distribution their community. We take on the work of sorting for them. We also do prepped food. City Team Ministries, downtown Oakland, feeds about 300 people a day. We help prep them their onions, their potatoes, their carrots. We do the peeling and chopping so that their team can save hours of time in their production, their big daily production.
Talk about collaboration. I mean, that is flipping awesome. Seriously.
Right. And then the way that we're generating revenue, which is really critical, because if we want our organization to sustain and grow, if we want to grow as a sector so that we can recover more food and feed more people, we need to be acknowledging that we are creating value. We are creating value by keeping the food out of the waste stream, by reducing the waste disposal costs for the businesses that otherwise would be composting or disposing of this food. And then, of course, we're creating this good food. And so we are generating revenue through catering. We recently started our catering operation and are all over the Bay Area, Oakland, Alameda, San Francisco, starting to feed people for their different events, conferences, celebrations.
How awesome. Like, I want to ring the bell. You know what I mean? It's like this is, and that's way businesses can help. And that's, we have some of that going on in our community. There's an organization called Caridad Kitchen, and it's an affiliate of the food bank. But I mean, they have a top chef. We're doing it at our YWCA. There's a food service program that they just started, and their catering is spectacular. It's not sloppy seconds, people. It's like top notch. They're going to get a really great reputation, and it's growing. This is not, it's just, to me, talk about everything working together. This is just a great example. And I saw some of the pictures on your website, and it's like, yeah, bring it on. I'm hungry. Let's do this thing. So moving along, right. So we can really talk more about what I call, you know, getting down to everybody's level of what they can do. It's not esoteric. It's not a concept that it's hard to grasp. And I'm a firm believer, if it is to be, it's up to me. And I try to live by that. There are many things that you can do, we as individuals can do, to be a part of the food waste solution in our own homes. And the website does a fabulous job of walking us through that. I have interviewed quite a few people about food waste, so I am aware of much of it, and we have implemented it, and it changes everything. So Let's start with, for example, where do we start? Is it a good place to go to the market, or do you start thinking about shifting your mindset? Where would you propose that people start the shift?
The biggest thing is to first make a commitment that
got it.
You are going to try to reduce food waste in your life wherever you can. And just like any behavior change, to start to notice, where does food waste show up in your life? And then to start changing your behavior to shift that waste. And knowing that you're going to fail sometimes, and oops, I forgot to eat those leftovers, or oops, I, you know, let that go too long in my fridge. But if you make the commitment and you start noticing, you're going to start noticing that every day you have 3, 5, 10 different opportunities where you can do something differently.
And I think you're right. It's like, who doesn't throw stuff out that you think you're going to eat, which leads the perfect segue to the market. You see something that looks really good, you buy too much. It's usually, for us, it's fresh produce, because if you buy stuff from the middle of the aisles, you don't have to eat it for several years, and that should be a red flag. But if you're buying fresh produce, that's what, to me, is starting with that, and hopefully people are eating more of that. But what about when you go to the market? What should you be prepared to do to help support your commitment?
Well, it starts before you get to the market.
Okay.
So the first thing that you got to do is, and this will become and can become part of the way you operate in your own kitchen and in your relationship with food, is what do you already have rather than what do I want? What recipe of all the recipes in the world could I make? What do I already have? Oh, I have 3 tomatoes. Oh, I have that eggplant I need to use. Oh, I've got some greens that I used for that salad. What can I make from what I already have? So really trying to get creative. And we're so lucky. We have a cookbook at our fingertips. If you have a laptop or computer or a phone with internet, you can type in the ingredients that you have.
So true.
And you will have hundreds of recipes that show up.
What can I make with this? That's a great idea.
Exactly.
Okay.
So that's what I do. I call it kind of patrolling your kitchen. So you're moving things around in your fridge. You're peeking in your freezer saying, oh yeah, I froze this tomato sauce, or I froze this pesto. I should use that tonight. Or I made this delicious curry. I'm going to pull that out. So using your freezer is also a really critical part of this whole food-saving thing. Your freezer is your friend. You can freeze leftovers. You can freeze fruit. You can freeze cheese and dairy, although the texture changes a little bit. It can still be frozen, safe for future use.
But even then, there are ways to do it right. And you know, Google is my best friend. If I want to know how to store something, food storage tips, just put it in. I have this leftover, what's the best way to store it? And some things are not great for freezing, but then that's the signal, well, let's eat that first. So shift your mindset, get ready, make a plan, and have that plan start with home. That's your first, that's where it starts. And then what do you tell us when we go to the market and all these things are tempting us?
Yeah, that's tricky. Well, I have a list. Make a list and stick to your list. If you know that you just need a few things to add value to those things that you already have in your home, stick to that list. And also understanding food dates is really important. There's a lot of information out there now about this, about how date labels are incredibly misleading and lead people to throw away a lot of food. But the reality is date labels on food are not federally regulated, and they are not an indication of when that food is spoiled, other than on baby food. So it's really important to see that date as something that was recommended by the manufacturer, but really to trust our own taste buds, our own smell, to know when food is fresh.
That is huge, huge. I did a show with Dana Gunders from Natural Resources Defense Council, and she really got down and dirty about it. It's a money-making scheme in some cases. There was some maybe thinly veiled attempt to make it safer, but by and large, please don't listen to those. And you can Google that too. I mean, there's lots of research on there, on websites about it. Okay, what about, do you take on educating people about schools? There are so many kids who go to school and there is so much food waste, not college campuses included. But what do you advocate in terms of parents that are listening that would like to see the food waste reduced in their schools?
Food Shift, the Oakland Unified School District, and StopWaste.org embarked on a partnership a few years ago to tackle school food waste. And each partner was really bothered by how much food was being wasted while these kids were often going home and didn't necessarily have snacks or have anything in their fridge, or they were coming home or coming to school in the morning without breakfast. And we thought, this is crazy. Let's set up a program where we capture the surplus carrots and granola bars and apples and milks at the end of the lunch period, save it in a refrigerator, and then distribute it to the parents and the students at the end of the school day.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
And we set up this program at 14 schools, each slightly different depending on parent and community involvement. And we created a model. So we do have a model available. People can go to Food Shift, email us directly if you'd like to have a copy of the step-by-step guide of how to set that up in your own school.
And I mean, it's amazing. And people need to remember there is something called the Good Samaritan Act, so that organizations are protected in case something does happen, which I don't know about you, but I've gotten food poisoning in some really nice restaurants. So the Good Samaritan Act really protects people that want to do the good thing, want to be disruptors for good, and you are protected. So I love that in schools. It's huge, which reminds me, I need to get the Food Recovery Network out to the University of Arizona. It's like, I'll just put it on my list. Okay, here's another one. And I'd like you to talk a little bit about, if you know, eating out. Is it a big part of the problem when you look at the portion sizes? I mean, my husband and I literally go to this one place. We split the meal, and it's a pasta meal, and we bring it home, and it feeds us again. So that's four meals out of one portion size.
Right.
And
right.
And I'm not kidding. I'm not exaggerating one bit. I mean, America has an obesity problem. I can't imagine why. Between the, you know,
right,
compromised food supply and overeating in restaurants or whatever. So talk about food waste and eating out. What are some of your top tips that people can shift their mindset about?
I think your practice is definitely a great one. Share dishes. You can always ask what is the portion size? Is it enough for two people? Is it enough for me if I'm really hungry or if I'm not very hungry? So ask questions. I always bring a Tupperware or some kind of container to take leftovers home in. I find the lids are better and stronger, so something won't spill. I then go directly home, and I haven't had to create either styrofoam or plastic or paper waste So that's one of those practices as we are in this stage of all needing to think about how we can live more eco-friendly lives. That's something that's really small. But I think sharing dishes with friends is a really great one. And it saves money, too. That's one of the benefits of all this.
It does.
If you reduce waste in your life, you're also reducing the cost at the same time.
It has an impact on your spending, and it really does. And the thing about taking leftovers home in a container that you brought, that, again, is a habit I'm still working on. But I preach to people when they say, oh, I keep forgetting my reusable bags at the grocery store. And I say, if you go to the grocery store and your bags are in the car, and you say, okay, I'll remember them the next time. You know, I go, these are good friends. And I say, wrong. Put your cart aside, walk out to the car and get your bags. And it only takes doing that once or twice. Because for me, and I am a radical, I should be, I'm Mrs. Green, for heaven's sake. But when I see, when I ask for leftovers and I see the styrofoam container coming, I feel twice as guilty. I don't even want to take the leftovers home. I feel so badly about a styrofoam container. So, of course, right. I always say something, is the owner here? And I'm very nice about, you know, styrofoam. But it's a habit that we really can get into. And the deal is, as soon as you take the leftovers out, wash it, the container, go put it back in your car. That's how it is. And another thing I noticed on your website when I was doing the research is, you know, this has got to become a new habit too. I am a freaking fanatic about straws, and I'm having an impact. I'm writing about it. I'm blogging about it. I just got a 10-year-old girl in Denver that wrote to me that I put her blog up, that she wrote to me because she saw this thing we put up on Facebook with the turtle getting the straw extracted. And it was a horrible video, painful, but it hurts. I wrote in my blog, if it hurts you to watch it, how do you think the turtle felt? But bringing utensils to picnics and events, it's really catching on. I just came back from the Wild and Scenic Film Festival in Nevada City, California, and they were really pushing that because at big events, there's big waste. And they went as green as you possibly could, and they had compostable utensils. But the deal is, the first R is reduce. So that's a big one that I have to shift to. I have my reusable straw. Everyone in my family does, or they don't get a straw. We're all straw phobic. But bringing utensils is another step that we have to remember. And it involves what you said, that planning and thinking. So I love that. Your website, man, it's like, yeah, if you want to know what to do, just go to the website. And I so mean that. It's so intuitive and so easy and so, like, sequential. What about businesses? That was, even reading that, it's like, how much of an impact can businesses have and how hard is it? So talk about what you advocate for reducing waste in your business.
Businesses are a huge part of the equation here. So many food businesses have food that for one reason or another they can't sell or don't want to sell. And so that's where there's really this synergy between the food recovery groups and the businesses working together. We did a pilot program with a small grocery store in the Bay Area a few years ago. They didn't yet have a food donation program set up because it had been challenging in the past. So many food recovery groups are either nonprofits or student groups, church groups that don't necessarily have the infrastructure to set up a regular pickup system that some stores just don't want to deal with it because it's challenging. Anyway, we wanted to set up one for them that would work, that would be consistent. And so they hired us to set that up. And they also had us, or we proposed to them, that we would look at their waste disposal bins and analyze how much less waste was in those bins since they were donating food. And what we discovered is they were able to save $27,000 a year on reduced waste disposal costs because now they were donating food, feeding the community, and not spending so much money on their waste bill. It's such a win-win for everyone.
It is just, I mean, that should be another bell ringer, another goosebump thing. It's like you, this is not always going to cost you money. And in fact, it can. When one of the restaurant groups I work with stopped using straws, they made enough money in 3 months recovering the money to buy compostable to-go containers. So, and they were really excited about it because they said, you know, those containers are so much more expensive. Okay, as usual, second break came up really fast. Everybody, please stay here with me. We have more really good things, good tips about food shift from people, from landfills to people. And from where I'm sitting, it's feeling pretty good. We'll be right back.
Mrs. Green's world's mission is to preserve the planet by creating a global community of people who care about the health of the earth. We educate, inform, and inspire. Mrs. Green's world is an independent, non-political, agenda-free voice. Your generous gift enables all of us to explore the issues facing the health of the planet in a comprehensive way. As a Mrs. Green's World sustainer, you can assist us in offering trusted information, providing listeners with the tools to make their own conclusions and choose their own steps to create a healthier planet. Visit MrsGreensWorld.com and click on Become a Member today.
Welcome back, everybody. I am Gina Murphy-Darling, and this is Mrs. Green's World. Thanks for being a part of it. If you just joined us, the topic for our show this hour is food shift. From landfills to people, what a concept. Instead of throwing it out, feeding people, creating jobs, the beat goes on. Joining us this hour to tell us exactly what that means and what it takes is Dana Fraz. She is the founder and director of Food Shift from the Earth Island Institute and is really on a mission to build a more just and sustainable food system that curbs waste, empowers communities, respects the environment, and nourishes all people. How could you not want to be on board with that, I ask you? There is no downside. So once again, Dana, thank you for being here to share all that you've shared and for what you're doing to make our world a better place, because what you do improves the quality of life for all of us. That saying that I always get wrong, but like a rising tide raises all ships or something. Like if it's better, it's for one, it's better for everybody. I just want to go back a little bit more to businesses. I am a huge fan of the movie Just Eat It. It blew me away when I watched it. I got to meet Jen, who was one of the filmmakers, and that did talk about exactly what you talked about for grocery stores in particular. If they over-ordered or whatever, getting rid of it is sometimes too costly, too time-consuming. So she filmed major things. I'll never forget it as long as I live, looking at what grocery stores threw away in dumpsters because it was just easier. But what about other businesses? Are there ways, if you just have a business with, say, I don't know, 200 employees, are there ways that we can get in the game, skin in the game, and really help to raise awareness among employees and all of that? Do you have any thoughts you want to share on, not everybody owns a grocery chain, you know what I mean?
Right. Absolutely. I mean, education is such a key part of this. We're all learning. We're becoming more aware of the challenges that we're facing as a global society and learning what we can do about it. So I think it's great for businesses to host these teach-ins, maybe a lunch and learn where you have a speaker come in and talk about different issues, or show a film. Just Eat It is a great example of a film that I've been to several film screenings of Just Eat It, and people really eat it up, I guess.
Literally, it blows your mind. You know, it blows your flipping mind when you see what food waste there is out there.
It really does. And then people get curious. They start to want to integrate some of the practices into their own lives because they've been exposed to it. And now they have a community of support. You can start talking about the solutions with your coworkers and with your team.
It's just, everybody should watch that movie. It should be shown in every high school, around the country, and that's where the seeds are planted. It could be shown in grammar schools too. It just makes it starts the consciousness and the shift already. You never get over it. Mm-hmm. So just it's the same. It's the same response. Do something. If you are a leader or a thought leader, or even if you don't own the business, approach your employer about doing it. And it's part of what I have green teams and businesses around here. And I love it because you start seeing shifts happen in people's behaviors just because there's awareness about it, which is really brings me to this question. And it's, I struggled with how to ask it, but I'm a great believer in my why. Why am I doing what I'm doing? Whether people are conscious of this or not, we all have our whys, why we do this and why we don't do that and why we get excited about some cause and not another. Since we all eat, what would you say should be our why? Why does reducing our food waste matter? Why should we care and join this cause with you? That's a big, bold question there, Dana. But I thought about it. It's like, why? Why? What can we do to get people to understand it's your future, too?
I love the question. And I believe that humans on this planet have the potential to not just do the least amount of harm, but that we actually can add value to the planet. And we do that by our daily choices, by what and where we buy, what and where we support, how we work with our community. And so this is one way we can not just try not to waste, but we can actually do something good by adopting this and other issues and making a positive contribution to the planet.
And, you know, I want to talk to you about the psychology of having on your website, there's a pledge. And I have signed the Oprah pledge for no texting. I've had to sign it a couple times. I need reminders on that. No texting while driving. I'm ashamed to say it, but I'm getting better. Really getting better. I'm putting life in people's lives in my hands. So leaving my phone down. I actually got an earpiece, which helps me greatly. But your pledge is simple. I signed the One Less Straw pledge that One More Generation put out, and I pledge not to use straw. And believe me, I stick to that one. So your pledge is very simple, and you pledge to reduce food waste. You ask people to sign it. Do you think there's a psychological piece to that, that really, it's so manageable what that pledge says and what you're committing to do? So talk about that. Why did you do that? Do you feel as though it brings about a more effective change in behavior?
I believe in verbalizing, writing down, and making commitments. I think it's another important piece of this is to talk about it. If you're listening, if you're inspired, if you want to be on board with this movement to reduce waste and other movements, start talking about it, because that verbalization of it, it starts to be a method of accountability. When you have spoken about it to a friend or a neighbor or a coworker, you start to build up your own power around it, that it's reinforcing that this is something I care about. It's part of who I am, is wanting to make the world a better place.
And it's just, there's something about it. Like if I, you know, I made a joke. I didn't mean to be a joke, but I was involved in observing a court case at one point, and someone like put their hand on the Bible, and whether you believe in it or not, if I'm in a courtroom and I put my hand on something and I'm pledging in front of everybody, like I swear, and the person lied, and I was in shock. And a couple of lawyers I know said, Gina, get out of your bubble. I mean, people do that all the time. But for most people like me, decent, ethical, moral people, if I sign a pledge, it's like somebody knows I put that on paper. So I'm glad that you did that, and I'm going to sign the pledge. So
great, thank you.
Tell me about, before we run out of time, I would like to talk about two more things. One is, how can people get involved with your food shift? And what are some of the easy ways? And then, if we have time, I just want to talk a little bit about, you know, some of the obstacles. What do we have to overcome a little bit? And then, because to me, if you, like you said, if you write them down, they're real and you can figure them out. So what are some of the obstacles and how do we overcome them? So what can we do to get involved?
Food Shift has a great website, you've mentioned, foodshift.net.
Absolutely great website.
We are on Instagram, Twitter, and have a great Facebook page as well, with a lot of stories and updates coming from the kitchen, but also news and inspiration about the issues more broadly. We have a newsletter that comes out either monthly or quarterly with some of those same things, job opportunities, stories, inspiration. And we are always looking to invite people to join our community of donors, people who believe in what we're doing, may not have the time to personally come into the kitchen or pick up the food, but want to add value to this movement. So we welcome anyone who's able to make a contribution, large or small. Every little bit helps us keep more food out of the waste stream and feed more people.
And if people really want to get involved, like if someone's listening to this, and this is how movements are started, and they said, I'm on it, I'm just getting ready to retire, or my kids are out of school, or my kids just started school, do you have the capability and the bandwidth to actually be able to help people that want to replicate, duplicate, or initiate what it is you're doing in the Oakland area?
Yes, that's a great question. That's a huge goal of Foodshift, is not just to create something here locally, but to create models and expertise that allow us to replicate these solutions in other communities. We're very open to talking to other folks who want to do what we've done here and evolve it, improve it for your specific community.
And also, let us not forget to mention, money is always welcome, because these things take money. So if food is one of your things and you want to, I'm a big believer in spreading it around. So what I do is a monthly donation, because I know for Mrs. Green's World, for our sustainers, the $10 or the $20 or the $25 that come in monthly help us to fulfill our mission. So it's very easy to do that, and I'm sure would be very welcome on your part.
Yes, thank you.
Yes. So let's talk a little bit about, I don't want to end up on a down note, but I do think it's sometimes people say to me, I get emails that say, why don't you talk about the hard part or the downside, or ask some really tough questions? And that's not what I wanted my show to be about. I wanted it to be about hope, possibility, and change. But that was 10 years ago. And we've got some tough issues facing anyone that considers himself to be an environmentalist or a social justice advocate. So what are some of your biggest challenges? I would think funding is one, but what else do you face on a regular basis in terms of challenges that are barriers that have to be overcome?
Yeah, well, when we look at challenges related to these problems of wasted food and hunger, we look at it at more of a systemic level. So we have challenges as an organization, of course, and a lot of them are synonymous with what's going on more broadly as a sector. And the number one thing that comes up again and again is insufficient infrastructure to meet the demand. So this means, you know, imagine all of the trucks and resources and infrastructure and staff that are out on the roads getting food from farm to the table. And then there's 40% of food, almost half of that food supply, that doesn't have a home because it's being tossed out or discarded in some way. And we do not have the same infrastructure on that other end to adequately recover, store, process, and redistribute the food. So we're challenged in that way, and that's in large part why DC Central Kitchen, LA Kitchen, Foodshift, and many others are working to build the infrastructure by putting more vehicles on the road to recover the food, hiring people to do the driving and the cooking and the distribution, getting additional refrigeration space to store the food. So that infrastructure piece is really, really critical. And of course, it takes resources and money to make it happen. So we have to get businesses and governments on board, acknowledging that food recovery has the potential to be a new service sector as an extension of our green economy. where if we pay into it, we can actually provide jobs and training for people as a way to move our green economy forward.
And I've had this discussion with so many people. The more people that work and have a livable wage and can support their families and educate their children, we have a more sustainable society. Everybody wins. There is just absolutely no downside. And if you're a rabid capitalist, they pay taxes then instead of being a tax burden. So to me, there is no ill logic in wanting things like this to happen. Another thing that popped out at me, because I am a fan of some of these organizations, but and it is a challenge. If your food consciousness has been, you know, if you're operating at a high vibration level, as I like to say, about food waste, events are so big. You see these events and they have food waste because people didn't show up or everybody didn't want this kind of food. So you have partnered with two organizations that I love, Bali and Bioneers. And then I'm curious about, and I get it. I mean, they would want a partner and they would want to help you. So talk a little bit about that. But then Airbnb, like how are you partnering with Airbnb? This is really good news for the planet.
Yeah, this is where FoodShift really customizes our services to our community based on what people want. So Airbnb wanted a educational week on food waste for their staff. And so we designed that and executed that for them. Bali Bioneers had these incredible conferences with a lot of engaged, socially minded folks, and they wanted to make sure that the food at the end of their event wasn't trashed. So we set that up. We worked with their catering companies and ensured that the food was redistributed in the community and that all the attendees who came to the event knew that that was happening. So that was a touch point. That was an opportunity to educate the attendees about the issue and about a solution that could be enacted pretty easily.
I mean, how powerful and how wonderful. I'm not kidding. What about the education piece, like conferences and bringing more groups of people together to raise the consciousness? What have you done or plan to do in that arena in terms of events, I would call them?
A lot. A big part of our work has been public education. We had 2 years where we had some ads on public transit throughout the Bay Area educating people about food waste. A million or more folks saw those ads. We speak all the time at the different universities that are local and sometimes national. So that education piece is really critical. More recently, we've been working with some local governments like Alameda County, San Francisco, Santa Clara, and we recently produced a report for Santa Clara County that outlined some recommendations for them in terms of how they could better connect surplus food in the region to people who need it. And very happy to say that they have been implementing some of those recommendations, the first of which was to hire someone on staff in the county as a food recovery coordinator to really demonstrate that this issue is a top priority.
So that would be a day that Dana Fraz probably did the happy dance. Those kind of days are like, yeah, I'm doing the happy dance on this one because they're institutionalizing it. And that's what
right,
has to happen.
Exactly.
That's a huge
exactly.
shift in consciousness. Well, I
right.
hope everybody of our many listeners around the country enjoyed this as much as I did. And I just want to tell you that our upcoming Down to Earth show is a best of show. The city's got solar and all of the amazing things that our city of Tucson is doing to walk the walk and have more solar on their facilities. And our February 6th show is with Dr. Michelle Boyce, and it's really about something we should all be paying attention to, breast health prevention and treatment. It never ceases to amaze me the number of women that still die from breast cancer. So we all know someone, we all have a family member. I hope you'll tune in for that show. And everybody, please go to foodshift.net. When you get off this podcast, or if you're driving in the car, make a note. because you're part of the solution. We are part of the solution. It's a great podcast, but there is a call to action here. And there are so many things we can do without ever having to leave the comfort of our own home. Shift that mindset, be a part of it, and get engaged. Follow them on Facebook and Twitter, and keep feeding your soul about how to make the food shift. Dana, thanks so much. What a great show, and thank you for all you're doing.
Thank you. It was great to talk with you.